My name is Roger Smith. This is part two of our interview with Dr. Jeanette Muir, an associate professor here at George Mason University. We're looking at issues involving the 18 to 29-year-old age bracket, which is going to be an important voting block in this upcoming presidential election. And we look at other areas involving voting and politics. You are very interested in engaging citizens in critical thinking about political campaigns to help them become better informed voters. About 4.5 years ago, you took a group of younger voters to New Hampshire and that primary time to study youth engagement in politics. Where did that idea come about and what goals were achieved with that event?
This is an event that we've been trying to do every 4 years for quite some time. And I think that, you know, you can talk about politics, but until you're actually in the midst of it, experiencing it, you don't really understand it. And the group that went in 2008, we had 19 people, and it was a real mix of folks from, you know, real politicos, people who wanted to devote their life to politics, versus some who had, one person just received her citizenship and she wanted to be a more informed voter. And then we had others that just said, you know, it sounds like fun. And so you get a wide range of interest. And then when they're up there, and we go to all of the events that we can and try to see every candidate. And, you know, I think New Hampshire in many ways is a microcosm of the United States, that a lot of people say, well, New Hampshire doesn't matter, but we spend some time in the state capital, and people get a sense of how important this process is in New Hampshire. And you know, they're really touched by it. I mean, a good example is that we were there on election day, and I gave students the option of either, you know, just taking the day off and relaxing, or maybe volunteering. And nearly everyone decided to volunteer on a campaign, which I think if you'd asked them a week before, they would have said, "What, are you crazy?" You know. So they saw how the media works. They see how the candidates work in different places. I had one student with us that every time he was in a space where he could ask a question, he did, and he actually got called on. So people say, well, these things are staged, and some is, but, you know, but not all of it. And so once students begin to see some of that, they go, wow, you know, this is something that's really interesting and also something that I need to know more about.
Wow, that's great. I'm glad that you were involved in that and to make a difference in the youth of our lives, too. And that's terrific. Let's see. One other thing that I was thinking about with civic engagement, of course, with the idealism aspect, I look at a lot of media, and I will look at some shows that might be attracting that audience, the 12 to 24-year-old audience or the 18 to 29-year-old audience, celebrities who will push liberal causes or have that liberal viewpoint. I wonder how much of that has an effect on our college age, because they'll see that, they'll see them as their role models, and really, maybe without critical thinking, vote in that block. Do you see any patterns like that?
Well, I think you do see, you know, certain celebrities and students say, oh, you know, this celebrity endorses this candidate, I may too. But I think that, you know, a lot of students go much deeper than that, you know, and really have those that begin to look at politics really start exploring a lot of various media outlets. I mean, one thing I tell my students in class is that if you really care about politics, you should watch C-SPAN, and it's about as exciting as watching paint dry, but, you know, that's where you see the unfiltered news in, you know, its purest form, and that can be really important to them, but also seeing multiple media outlets. But, you know, it's interesting that a big area that a lot of students gravitate toward is like Comedy Central,
right?
And, you know, watching some of those kinds of shows, and even Saturday Night Live. And so humor, satire,
right,
all these things also play into it as well. But, you know, as I tell students and anyone thinking about politics, is that you need to be a good critical thinker. You need to understand, you know, what are the issues that are really fundamental here for you, and, you know, not just vote because this person's funnier or looks more presidential or is someone I could have a beer with, you know, that we really make much more better informed decisions.
I was going to bring that up also, the satire aspect. When mm-hmm. somebody's watching that show, I tell them, well, you're getting satire, that's good, but it's not really a discussion. And I'm hoping that they would have that this type of distinction, too. Sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't, I've seen.
Right. What's interesting is to see how what happens in politics then enters through popular culture and to really trace that. And so, yeah, we can see, you know, actors playing Hillary Clinton and Sarah Palin on Saturday Night Live. But let's backtrack and see what got to that point, you know, and why are they doing it this way? And, you know, what do we learn from this? And, you know, at some level, does it get people to pay attention? Well, yeah. And is that a good thing? Sometimes, as long as they're informed when they're voting, you know. I think that that kind of exposure is an interesting thing. A lot of students gravitate toward, you know, that humor. I have in my class right now, a group that's going to be looking specifically at humor in elections and going back in history a little bit. So it's an interesting thing because I think, like with humor and satire, that stays in the memory a lot longer. So that's why in a debate, you can listen to an entire debate, but what you remember is that, you know, that big zinger of a line that says, you know, you're no Jack Kennedy, and yes. that becomes something that you always remember.
And that leads me to the final area, because one of your areas of interest is political advertising. And I go back to even before our students were born, and almost even before I was born, maybe a few months after I was born, the Johnson ad mm-hmm. with the Daisy girl. Yeah. Didn't run all that much, but made a terrific impact on the election to have the voter actually put Goldwater in the ad that he was never mentioned, but he put him in the ad mm-hmm. thinking, well, we'll go to war if you elect him. And the voters never going to indict themselves on dirty politicking. So mm-hmm. that's what made that work. I don't see, unless you've watched some more, an effective political ad like that, and especially this season. And we're getting a huge number of them since Virginia is a swing state mm-hmm. in this and presidential election. Plus, we're electing a senator to Virginia. Has anything stuck out of your mind that would be an effective political ad from any candidate at any level?
You know, nothing is standing out right now. The interesting thing about the Daisy Girl ad is that, you know, you thinking it in historical context, the fact that political advertising was more general, you know, it was more focused on national rather than, you know, now we have basically 50 independent campaigns given all the various states, the swing states mm-hmm. and so forth, that with media as it was then, when you have one or two broadcast channels, you know, mm-hmm. that's something that's going to get your attention. The interesting thing about that ad is it aired once, and right. Johnson saw it to take it off the air. But that was an example of media picking it up and showing it over and over and over again. It got huge amounts of mileage. And then same thing happened in 88 with the Boston Harbor ads and right. Dukakis. And I, you know, sometimes it depends on a clever ad that's either really funny or strikingly visual. What seems to be happening right now is just the continual looking at these ads as, you know, all of the various misinterpretation or outright lies and corrections. The other thing about that is that you're going to find much more negative advertising coming from the PACs or the super PACs rather than the candidate right. himself. And I think that impacts it all as well.
Associate Professor Janet Muir, I really appreciate your time and your perspective. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Happy to do it.
This concludes part two. To listen to part one of this interview with Dr. Muir, please visit our Mason Votes webpage.